As the story went, reported by Mark Twain,
in the name of the people of the United States, to whom you bold and armed.
The stage is set in Nevada for the 35th nuclear explosion. Donald Campbell, the fastest man on water on Lake Mead, Nevada.
Be lady tonight.
Let's play word association. If I said entertainers in Las Vegas, what combinations come to mind? A lot of them. Liberace, certainly. Siegfried and Roy, of course. Wayne Newton, sure. You might think of other entertainers or symbols like the showgirl, the production show, or the Cirque show. But you can't talk about entertainment in Las Vegas without talking about the Rat Pack. And you can't talk about the Rat Pack without talking about its leader, Frank Sinatra. December 12th marks the birth of the chairman of the board. He was born in Hoboken, New Jersey. As a little boy, he sang in a tavern for spare change. He had his first success with a group called the Hoboken Four, which appeared on national radio. He got a job singing with a band led by trumpeter Harry James, later a Las Vegas performer and resident. Then in 1940, Sinatra joined another big band led by Tommy Dorsey and began having a string of hit records. When Sinatra decided to go solo, he and Dorsey had a big fight, culminating in a lawsuit. The rumor was that mobster Willie Moretti, who was said to be close to Sinatra, convinced Dorsey that he should let the singer go and sing on his own. The convincing allegedly involved a gun. Sinatra was rocketing to stardom. His record sold big. He appeared in successful movies, mostly musicals. And then, disaster. In the late 1940s and early 1950s, he had vocal problems. His movies stopped selling well. His records weren't selling. And his image took a big hit when he left his wife, the mother of his three children, for actress Ava Gardner. But his career came back, bigger than ever. He revived his movie career, and from here to eternity, he campaigned for the role of Maggio and won an Oscar as the Best Supporting Actor. After that, he made several popular films, from the dramatic, like The Manchurian Candidate, to musicals like Guys and Dolls. Columbia Records no longer wanted him, but Capitol Records did. As for his first album, well, there's a story. The night Sinatra died, the great Dodger broadcaster Vin Scully said on the air, "You young people, you may think you know about romance, but you don't know romance until you've heard Songs for Young Lovers by Frank Sinatra Valentine, with Nelson Riddle conducting." And Scully was right. The combination was a commercial and financial success. There would be many more recordings. By the time he died in 1998, he had recorded 69 albums and had nearly 300 singles, including duets and collaborations with Count Basie and Duke Ellington, and several where he conducted his own music. He appeared in more than 50 films. He was a success, but he was also a complicated man. He was controversial. He got into public fights, verbal and physical. He had mood swings, but he could also be generous to a fault. He was politically active, first as a Democrat and eventually as a Republican. He believed in civil rights and claimed on a live album to have helped desegregate Las Vegas by helping African-American entertainers to stay at the hotels where they performed. Whether he was important on that issue is debatable. What is not debatable is his connections to Nevada and the important role he played in the state of Nevada, especially in Las Vegas. Nevada in general, and Las Vegas in particular, were an important part of his life. He made his film debut in Las Vegas Nights, an otherwise forgettable movie that came out in 1941. He was in it only briefly, as a vocalist for Tommy Dorsey, singing "I'll Never Smile Again." And when his career was in the doldrums, he made his debut at the Desert Inn on September 4, 1951. And he said, "For $6, you get a filet mignon dinner, and you get me." He didn't actually wow the crowd the way he would later. That came when he made the Sands his second home. The Sands had opened in December 1952. The impresario for entertainment was Jack Entrotter, a veteran of the Coco Cabana in New York City. The Copa connection led not just to the entertainment venue being the Copa Room, it also meant that a lot of big-name entertainers immediately had a tie to the Sands. Sinatra debuted there in October 1953. Over the next decade and a half, he would appear there regularly and even be licensed as a part owner. He was close and loyal to Entrada, who had stood by him during those tough times he had. Mike Weatherford, the longtime Review Journal entertainment writer, put it best. The Sands, he said, became his personal playground. When he was in Hollywood, Sinatra would hang out with friends like Humphrey Bogart and Lauren Bacall. The group became known as the Rat Pack. The origins of the name are murky. Supposedly, Bacall pinned it on them after a long night of debauchery led to a longer day of hangovers. They were also known as the Clan, as in a family, but the name had other meanings that didn't exactly go over well. After Bogart died, Sinatra became the undisputed leader of the group. The five key members were Sinatra, Dean Martin, Sammy Davis Jr., Joey Bishop, and Peter Lawford. In 1960, they were coming to Las Vegas to film Ocean's 11. This gave Sands publicist Al Freeman an idea. Since world leaders Dwight Eisenhower and Nikita Khrushchev were supposed to hold a summit later that year, why not a summit of the world's entertainment leaders? It was advertised as the Summit at the Sands. During the filming of Ocean's 11 in January and February, the five entertainers were supposed to rotate in the Copa Lounge at the Sands. Instead, they wound up doing the shows together, and it became an unprecedented entertainment event. Hollywood stars visited. Lucille Ball, Jack Benny, Bob Hope. A politician showed up, Senator John Fitzgerald Kennedy of Massachusetts, a candidate for the presidency that year. And that's where he appeared to have met Judith Campbell, who later became his lover. She was also close to Chicago mob boss Sam Giancana in the same way. The summit at the Sands was supposed to last 3 weeks. It went on for 5 weeks. The shows continued afterward in the Sands Lounge and in the private suites. Ocean's 11 came out later that year. The Rat Pack would make a couple of more films, but Sinatra and Lawford would have a falling out, and the group would never be the same. There would be repercussions that affected the life of Frank Sinatra. In 1960, Sinatra was riding high, and Las Vegas was part of his ride. The Rat Pack had just wowed the entertainment world. He had met John Kennedy, liked him, and supported his presidential campaign. And it didn't hurt that another member of the pack, Peter Lawford, was married to the former Patricia Kennedy. Sinatra called him Brother in Lawford. But there were some rocky times ahead. As president, JFK was supposed to stay at Sinatra's Palm Springs estate. But the president changed his mind after a controversy involving Sinatra. This upset Sinatra, who blamed Lawford for not smoothing the waters. Their relationship was at an end. Sinatra had a lot of other things going for him. These included part ownership of the Sands and of the Calneva Lodge in Lake Tahoe. But in 1960, Nevada gaming regulators created the Black Book, officially known as the List of Excluded Persons. They especially targeted mobsters, including Chicago's Sam Giancana. The rumor was that Sinatra was actually the front man for Giancana. Whatever the merit of that was, in 1963, Sinatra hosted Giancana at the Calneva. Well, that was a no-no, to put it mildly. For that offense, Sinatra could lose his license. State officials investigated, the media became aware of it, and Sinatra called Ed Olson, the chairman of the Gaming Control Board. He accused Olson of leaking the story and of being out to get him. Olson denied both. Sinatra made a few additional comments. We won't quote them. We like our FCC license, so we don't want to use his words. But in the end, Sinatra gave up his license. Life at the Sands changed, too. Howard Hughes bought the hotel in 1967. Sinatra's line of credit was cut. Sinatra got mad and wound up in a confrontation with Sands Casino executive Carl Cohen. It ended with Cohen decking Sinatra, knocking out a couple of teeth. Old Blue Eyes went across to Caesar's Palace and never returned to the Sands. Sinatra announced his retirement in 1971, but he came back. He continued to perform in Las Vegas for another 2 decades, first at Caesar's and later at the Golden Nugget. He signed with Steve Wynn to perform at his properties in Las Vegas and Atlantic City. He kept performing as time made his voice rougher and he needed some help in remembering the words. But he remained an incredible draw. He didn't live here, but he was part of the community. He did a concert with Dean Martin and Diana Ross to open the Thomas and Mack Arena. He appeared on Jerry Lewis's annual Labor Day telethon for the Muscular Dystrophy Association. He received an honorary doctorate from UNLV, and he and Las Vegas remained inseparable. His name adorns a Las Vegas street. There's a restaurant in the Encore with his name. When he died, the Las Vegas Strip dimmed its lights, as it should have. Entertainment columnist James Bacon ran with Frank in their younger days. He said that Frank embodied the glamour of Las Vegas, and indeed he did. He will always be the chairman of the Las Vegas board. This is Senator Richard Bryan urging you to join me next time for more Nevada Yesterdays.
I planned each charted course, each careful step along the byway, and more, much more than this, I did it